This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Andrea Seabrook in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Bolivians overwhelmingly voted last week for a leftist candidate to be their next president. Evo Morales, who campaigned on a platform of radical economic reforms, joins other socialist or center-left presidents across Latin America, including in Venezuela, Argentina, and Uruguay. With 9 other Latin American countries holding elections next year, that number could increase. Today on Talk of the Nation, a look at the political and economic changes underway in Latin America. What accounts for the recent shift to the political left? And what are the policy implications for the U.S.? Later, edgy airline passengers are about to come under special scrutiny by the Transportation Security Administration. But first, Latin America. If you're from the region or do business there, what do you think of the changes taking place? What role do you see for the U.S. now? Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Peter Hakam, president of the Inter-American Dialogue. That's a private nonprofit center for policy analysis on Western Hemisphere relations based here in Washington. Peter Hakam joins us in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Peter Hakam, let's start with the election of Evo Morales in Bolivia. Touch on that quickly. What happened, and what does it say about the people of Bolivia?
Well, let me say that the election of an opposition politician like Evo Morales means in Bolivia what it means in most places, that the people of Bolivia were very unhappy with the previous governments, several recent governments. There was almost no growth in Bolivia for the past 5 years, although last year was not a bad year. Almost no progress in dealing with Bolivia's very deep social problems, enormous political tension, huge rates of joblessness, and the people were unhappy. So they voted for an opposition politician that promised them a new way of doing things. It's very simple.
And who is Evo Morales? What we've heard about him in the news in the last week and a half or so is that he's a former coca farmer.
Well, he was the head of the Coca Growers Association in Bolivia. You have to realize that some coca growing is legal in Bolivia. They use it in a variety of ways. But he is a man clearly of the left, associates with Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, with Fidel Castro, has taken a rather anti-U.S. line, is proposing to stop the eradication of coca plant, which is the precursor of cocaine in Bolivia, is promising to nationalize Bolivia's resources. In other words, he's taking what would be classically a left-wing anti-U.S. position.
You spoke about the social problems, the economic problems in Bolivia, the jobs, the grinding poverty, these kinds of problems. How much can you generalize from Bolivia across South America and Latin America?
Well, not a whole lot. The media likes to focus on the trend toward left-wing governments in Latin America. And if one looks at the parties that are winning elections, the candidates, there is this shift. But it's really too simplistic a way to describe what's going on in Latin America. I think what you have is changes that are going on varied dimensions. And it's very important to look at the new leadership in Latin America, not from only the left-right dimension. But, for example, are the new leaders democratic or not? There's very few leaders in Latin America who have not been elected. In fact, there's only one right now, Fidel Castro, who hasn't won his position by election. Virtually every one of the so-called left leaders is committed to democracy, fought for democracy under military rule. The one exception to that is Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, who has not acted democratically. Second question, where do they stand on economic policy? The left has generally in the past been associated with populist economic policies that have left governments bankrupt, high inflation and all. Well, inflation has never been lower in Latin America today. which is more emblematic of a process of policymaking that is much more disciplined, much more orthodox today. Again, the exception is Hugo Chavez more than anyone else, but he has these enormous oil resources. Came to power with oil at $10 a barrel. It's now $60 a barrel. He can afford to be a populist. Most other leaders cannot. And lastly, there's the question of anti-Americanism. And unfortunately, this is more a little more widely shared. But still, the U.S. has good relations with many of the leftist governments. For example, in Brazil, where there's huge disagreements. The leadership, President Lula, clearly a man of the left, emerged from labor union movement, has had very good relations. In fact, the U.S.-Brazil relations may be a good model for the future of U.S.-Latin American relations. Less influenced by the United States, less shaping of events in the hemisphere, and more willing to tolerate differences, to accept the fact that countries can disagree without being adversaries.
So if there is no real, if this isn't a backlash against policies of the World Bank and IMF necessarily, or against the U.S., that in fact those policies have in a long-term sense won by most of the candidates being pro-open democracy, pro-free markets in general, then what is this trend that we're seeing? Are the people not hoping to go back to a system that will in some ways have the government take more care of them?
I think people want governments that can produce economic growth, that can produce stability. The two biggest issues in Latin America today, what people are most unhappy about, are one, unemployment, lack of jobs, and secondly, they're unhappy about crime and violence. Governments that can deal with those issues, take President Uribe in Colombia. He's a man, a very conservative. He's very likely to win re-election. He has 70% popularity. Why? Because he brought a higher measure of security to Colombia than any past president. And the growth rate is reasonably good in Colombia. Left-wing governments like Kirchner have done very, very well. He's very popular as well. Why? Of course, he's brought economic growth, 3 years of really very fast growth. Whether he can sustain that is something else again. But people are looking to governments for high performance. Governments that aren't performing are going to be voted out of office. In this case, in Latin America, there was a lot of centrist, center-right governments. They're being voted out when they can't produce the goods. And these left-wing governments will be voted out, too, if they don't produce.
And let's just talk a little bit about the President Bush's reaction, the administration's reaction to these elections, this slow, seemingly slow turnover to more leftist stance of Latin America, if not a trend or a swing. You know, it seems as if the president is not exactly sparkly happy about this, the election of Evo Morales and others.
Well, I think the concern about Evo Morales has really much less to do with left-right than it has to do with the pronounced anti-Americanism of so much of Evo Morales' speeches and his clear indication that he is not very happy with U.S. anti-narcotics activities in Bolivia. But on the whole, the administration has managed its relations with the left-wing governments in Latin America quite well. I think the U.S. government has an extraordinary opportunity with Evo Morales, frankly. And one opportunity is, here's a man that has won an election with 54% of the vote, the highest vote ever in a Bolivian election, at least in recent memory, one of the highest in Latin America. The U.S. is committed to democracy. It ought to be committed to helping this man sort of be successful. And secondly, it's a challenge on the drug fight. Virtually any serious observer of the U.S. anti-drug war would say that it's been a massive failure. Hasn't changed at all the price availability of drugs in the United States. The one place where it's had some success is Colombia, but largely not in terms of stopping the trade so much as in helping the government gain greater authority and be able to provide increased security through the country.
We're talking about U.S. policy in Latin America and a recent swing to the left. Let's go to the phones. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, especially if you have business interests in the region or are from the region. We'd love to hear from you. Let's start with Matt in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the gentleman's comments. I agree that democracy is important in the region. However, I think we've proven in the past with our interests and how we react in Latin America, I think that it's proven problematic on many occasions, including what we did with Chile and putting Pinochet in power. So I think that we need to, just let the region self-govern itself. And let's also be honest with why the coca is so prosperous in the region is because of the demand to the United States. And the coca plant has many cultural significance to some of the indigenous tribes in South America. So I think eradicating it and it's bringing a clandestine war into a region where we have no business, I think is problematic. And I think that the best way is to focus the war on drugs at home and not on foreign soil with South American people knowing much about it.
Peter Hakem?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt even the U.S. government recognizes the that U.S. demand for drugs is what fuels the production in South America. But let's remember that the U.S. is not the only country that consumes drugs. The second largest consumer of drugs in the world is a Latin American country, Brazil. And it's these illicit drugs and their use that's also fueling much of the crime wave that's captured so many places in Latin America and has been so damaging to the region.
We're talking about Latin America's political leadership and the future of U.S.-Latin American relations. If you're from a Latin American country or do business in the region, we'd love to hear from you. What are your concerns? Call us at 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. Still in the studio with us is Peter Hakem, president of the Inter-American Dialogue, a private nonprofit center for policy analysis on Western Hemisphere relations. And joining us now in the studio is Roger Noriega, former ambassador to the Organization of American States and former assistant secretary of state for Western Hemisphere affairs in the George W. Bush administration. How are you, sir?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Good. Also, Arturo Valenzuela, director of the Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University, former senior director for Inter-American Affairs at the National Security Council in the second Clinton administration. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Glad to have you both with us. Let's start with the idea of the left and the right. Can we use these sort of general terms? And what is a socialist regime anymore in a completely democratic environment? Let's start with you, Mr. Noriega.
Well, I think it's a very good question, and I think Peter Hakem has done a fairly good job characterizing the fact that you cannot generalize, really. For example, President Lagos, Ricardo Lagos of Chile, is a member of the Socialist Party. But he has pursued extraordinarily responsible economic policies that have been welcoming to business, that have opened up the economy there, that has pursued a rather centrist approach to foreign policy, has excellent relations, for example, with the United States, and has steered well clear of the sort of bombastic populist profile that's offered by Hugo Chavez, for example. So I don't think you can by any means generalize. In point of fact, there is this responsible leadership on the part of Lagos, Tabaré Vázquez in Uruguay, for example, both men of the left. But they, again, haven't pursued confrontational policies with the United States, pursued free market policies, are interested in trade and investment with the rest of the world and with the United States in particular. So I think it's really not accurate to generalize.
Arturo Valenzuela.
Yes, well, I agree with that. I think that in some ways we need to think about the fact that in Latin America you have two lefts. One is this sort of populist, somewhat demagogic left, and I think Venezuela is really the characteristic case of this kind of left. And in most of the other places in Latin America where you have a left, it's a left that has taken on a different perspective. It is attempting to deal with globalization, I think, in a responsible way. You see that in Brazil. You see that as well as in Chile, in Uruguay, in other places. And I think that that's very important. Now it's critical, however, in our discussion to make a distinction, I think, between the left, whether it's a demagogic left or whether it's a more of a social democratic left, between that and policies that are more identified, I guess, with the center right, and this, what is the difference? The difference is that the leftist governments, whether it's Lagos or whether it's Tabaré Vázquez or Lula, really do see a very important role for the state, and they think that the state is absolutely critical in bringing up the competitiveness of these countries. It means much more investment in education and infrastructure, far greater state action. The view is somehow that the state needs to get out of the business of the economy and should not be relevant in pursuing strong economic policies social policies as well, is something that the left doesn't share in Latin America with countries where there's less of a commitment to a role of the state on the social side.
So in essence, we're talking big government, small government, an issue we're more or less familiar with here in the United States. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's right, although I think that people would quibble with the notion of big government and say what really they're looking for is more effective government. And it's a government that can regulate more effectively, but also that can take significant action. The Chileans are a good example because they brought poverty down, for example, from about 40% at the beginning of the democratic period to about 18% today. And high levels of absolute poverty have practically disappeared in Chile. It's been an extraordinary success story in that regard.
Ambassador Noriega?
Well, one thing I wanted to add, I think Arturo has put his finger on the important pivot point in this issue, and that's the role of the state. One thing that I am a bit concerned with when we look at, Kirchner in Argentina and even Lula in Brazil is sort of a nostalgia for a statist approach. I think it's disturbing that Brazil under Lula seems to be preserving the prerogative to have sort of an industrial policy, and I think that has kept Brazil from going forward with trade agreements, for example, because they're concerned about opening up their economy, and that is a concern. The other thing is this nostalgia for Peronism in Argentina, I think, is pretty disturbing, because I think there are very few outside observers who would regard that as a flourishing time in Argentina's history. And in point of fact, the seeds of some of the problems that you see there today.
Okay, let's get to some of our listeners. Let's start with Jose Maria in Coral Gables, Florida. Hi, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hi, where are you from?
I'm from Buenos Aires, Argentina. I was born there, but it's about 45 years that I live in this country.
Well,
I was listening to one of your guests, I think it was the first gentleman, who was talking about the government of Argentina and how flourishing and the economy seems to be in the latter years, ever since Mr. Kirchner is in power. I agree with the second guest that you have there, that is very, very disturbing. The fact that Mr. Kirchner is acquiring this apparently flourishing economy based on the fact that he has defaulted in the largest world ever debt only a couple of years ago. Argentina is not paying a penny to anybody, and the bonds that were sold were bought at 70% off by the government of Mr. Chavez.
Well, let's
second,
say,
the background of Mr. Kirchner, you may know and your guests may attest to this, comes from the very far left in Argentina. They were all very active leftists during the 70s, terrorists, what they call montoneros, which were the strong force of the Peronism in the 70s, the ones who made the return of the exile from Spain to Argentina.
Let me get a reaction from our guest, Peter Hakem.
Well, let me say first, I'm not a great fan of Mr. Kirchner's economic policies. I've long argued against many of them, but his success over the past 3 years, or let's say the success of the economy of Argentina, cannot be denied. I think you're also a little bit exaggerating when you say he's defaulted on his payments and he's not paying a penny. The fact is that for a couple of years they were not paying. They were virtually bankrupt, the government. Then there was a negotiation with the bondholders. The Argentine government played very, very rough, more rough than probably it should have and that I would have been comfortable with. But it's now paying back most of its former bondholders. Like I say, I don't have very much good to say about the way the economy is being directed right now in Argentina, but I think it's important to get the facts straight.
Ambassador Noriega.
I agree with what Peter has said, but I think the caller makes a good point that it is the Argentine economy is basically experiencing growth now because it's rebounding from a crisis of 2001, which had virtually collapsed. Kirchner has been up to this point responsible fiscally, and they're running a surplus in the government. But what we're concerned with, I think, is that he is now adopting a pretty irresponsible approach, quite frankly. It's in the campaign season. He wants to be reelected or wants to advance his party's interests, so we're worried about spending there. He's indicated that he wants to go separate ways from the International Monetary Fund, which is perfectly his right to do, but what we're concerned with is that maybe he wants to be rid of any kind of constraints on spending. He has not done essential things to deal with the roots of the economic crisis. Financial sector reform and their energy sector policy is a disaster and has frightened away investment. So it's essentially a dead cat bounce, as economists will say, from that economic crisis of 2001. And I am afraid that he's improvising and that the bills are going to come due literally and figuratively in the year 2006.
Arturo Valenzuela.
Yes, I think there are grounds for concern. There's inflationary pressures in Argentina now that are troublesome and worrisome. Generally speaking, the policy has been a fairly good policy. I guess I would disagree a bit with Peter Hakem's earlier categorical comment that there was a settlement with the bondholders. Essentially, what the Argentine government said was, either take it or leave it. And there's a substantial class of bondholders in Argentina that did not accept the Argentine offer, and they are trying to sue in court now in order to get paid for their legitimate debt. And it's hurt Argentina as it goes forward because there's still an enormous amount of skepticism in the private sector about investing in Argentina. It's also hurt other countries in the region because they saw what happened with Argentina and that has had a demonstration effect in other countries in the region. And unless Argentina gets significant external investment in the next few years, it's going to be difficult. Let me add one other thing, though, about Argentina that I think that would help us draw open this discussion a little bit more, and that is one thing that is worrisome in Argentina is the fact that Argentina is essentially a one-party state today. With the return of democracy in Argentina, you had a fairly vibrant two-party system with the Peronists and the Radical Party. The Radical Party has practically disappeared. The opposition is fairly fragmented. The Peronist Party, of course, is divided within, but I think healthy democracies really require a significant amount of competitiveness, and that's one thing that I would worry about with regard to Argentina.
Let's go back to some of our callers. Jose in Washington, D.C. Hi, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, where are you from?
I'm from Bolivia.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I just wanted to comment. It was very interesting to hear you, both of your guests, and I'd like to remind them that and since you went off the topic and started talking about Argentina, don't forget that the Menem government was supported by the United States and did this free market economy policies and all that, and it failed and it went bankrupt due to those policies. And that was supported 100% by the United States. So your guests should be honest with the listeners, and the failed policies of neoliberalism caused that government to go bankrupt. And that was Menem, and he was supported by Clinton and Bush. And so that's That's, you got to be clear about that.
Do you have a question, Jose?
So the thing about Bolivia, I think it's great that Evo Morales has been elected, and the people of Bolivia voted for him, and you got to give him a chance. Okay. The other thing is about Chavez. Okay, he was elected the president of Bolivia, and the United States and Mr. Noriega's government, who he's allied with, tried to overthrow him a couple of years ago. And so here you go, have a situation where Latin Americans vote for their leaders, and if they don't toe U.S. policy, they'll get overthrown by the U.S.
Ambassador Noriega.
Well, first off, let me say that it's important to note that the policy pursued by President Clinton, before him President Bush, and recently President Bush 43, has been one of supporting democratic institutions. And quite frankly, it's Evo Morales' election is important as a result of a policy that has advocated democracy, democratic institutions. I can tell you, without going into too many specifics, when I was assistant secretary, there were repeated concerns about military coups at the prospects of Evo Morales' election. And the United States stepped in repeatedly and said that that would be absolutely unacceptable. So the fact that this man of the left, whatever he is, what I think he is mostly as an indigenous leader, is elected and is going to be assuming the presidency is in part of part of our policy. On Venezuela, very, very briefly, President Chavez was elected originally, it is true. What he has done since then is mugged his political opposition systematically, concentrated power within the presidency. And in recent elections, only about 20% of the people even bothered to mark a ballot in favor of his political movement. So I think Chavez may have hit his high water mark both internally and internationally.
We're talking about Latin American policy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Arturo Valenzuela, care to comment on
that? Yes, I would. I think that in terms of the caller's question, this concern over, in fact, whether the policies that the United States has advocated in the region have really produced results, we need to, I think, make some distinctions. I think there's no question whatsoever that Latin America had to impose economic discipline, macroeconomic discipline, structural reforms. They were needed. We must remember that in Bolivia itself, in the early 80s, inflation reached 25,000%. The economies were stagnating, but with inflation, and that's the cruelest tax on the poor. So there had to be some significant economic reform. Now, where I think that we need to clarify things, though, however, is that free markets alone don't resolve the problems, and trade alone does not resolve the problems. Trade and economic stabilization are necessary conditions, but not sufficient conditions for significant growth. And that's why there has to be a significant governmental response, significant governmental intervention in order to bring about greater competitiveness for the countries. And then finally, a brief word on Venezuela. I think, unfortunately, the administration made a serious, serious mistake in the case of Venezuela. And we're talking about April of 2002. When there was a military movement, Chavez was forced to either resign or something like that. But instead of coming out squarely and saying clearly, as the previous administration had, or the first Bush administration had, or even the second Reagan administration, the United States would not countenance a military coup, the White House tended to equivocate, and that was an unfortunate response.
Just a couple of seconds, right, Ambassador Noriega.
What happened in April 2002, Arturo, and I've heard you say this before, is you're mischaracterizing it. What happened there was a military that refused to carry out orders of Chavez to use weapons of war against peaceful demonstrators. It wasn't a classic military coup. Chavez brought that upon himself, and I'm afraid he may be sowing the seeds of his own destruction still.
Roger Noriega was ambassador to the Organization of American States and former Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs in the Bush administration. He's now at the American Enterprise Institute. Arturo Valenzuela is director of Center for Latin American Studies at Georgetown University. Thank you both for joining us.
My pleasure.
Pleasure.
Stay tuned. This is Talk of the Nation. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Andrea Seabrook in Washington. Tomorrow, the 2008 presidential race is still 2 years away, but it's already casting a shadow over political life in Washington and beyond. We'll talk about how. Right now, our focus is Latin American politics. Still with us in Studio 3A is Peter Hakim. He's the president of the Inter-American Dialogue, a private nonprofit center for policy analysis on Western Hemisphere relations. Before the break, Peter Hakim, we had a conversation that really focused the magnifying glass on some specific countries. I know you had a couple things you wanted to say about that.
Well, let me just say that there's a lot of conversation about the U.S. role in Latin America, which is the subject today. And the United States is a very powerful actor in the region. It makes a difference. It's hugely wealthy compared with the countries of Latin America. But frankly, what happens in most countries, in virtually every country of Latin America, is determined by the politics, the leaders of that country. Morales emerged in Bolivia because of particular characteristics of Brazil, of Bolivia, the failure of previous leaders, the failure of governments to satisfy the poor. This is not the result of U.S. neglect, nor is the result of U.S. intervention. Let me say, however, that today the U.S. is not very well liked in Latin America. There is across the region a strong anti-U.S. feeling. In part, this is the result of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, the scandals of Abu Ghraib, the Guantanamo prison. That Latin Americans feel in good measure that the U.S. isn't really following the rules. They're not following international norms, and this has created a certain backlash in the region. And they also feel the U.S. has sort of turned its attention away from the region. There's also policy issues that separate the Latin America and the U.S. And there are two or three things the U.S. could do to make a difference, but they're very hard politically. One of those things, most importantly, is the agricultural protectionism, the barriers to agricultural imports that this country, the U.S., has imposed on Latin America, which is a big agricultural exporter.
Well, let me ask you this, Peter Hakim. Is it fair to say that the Bush administration's attention has shifted away from Latin American policy?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. It shifted away from almost every foreign policy except that focused on the war against terror, the Middle East, maybe something on China and nuclear proliferation. But almost any area of the world you go to, there's a feeling that the U.S. has shifted its attention away, and Latin America is no different. There is a sense that senior officials, from the president to secretary of state, pay only intermittent attention to the region, that important decisions aren't getting taken, that key developments aren't being taken account of the way they should.
And let me ask you this. 9 elections coming up in 2006. Right. Are we going to see a sweep across Latin America, continuing trend here, or do you think it'll be patchy? What are your predictions?
Oh, I think there's going to be a great variety of elections. Let me say that of the 9 elections, 2 are particularly important, Brazil and Mexico. These are 2 countries that represent more than 60% of Latin America's population, more than 60% of its economic activity. And what also makes these elections important is that we don't know the outcome. There will be, in both cases, a left-right competition. In the case of Brazil, the current government is probably going to want to stay in power. President Lula will be running from the left, and his predecessor, the government party that was his predecessor, is going to be nominating a candidate that's going to be contesting from the center-right. And we don't know the result, but we do know one thing. That both governments are going to have pretty much the same economic policies and pretty much the same commitment to democracy.
And Mexico?
And Mexico, we have again, we have 3 candidates. The election is in July of this year. 1 from the left, 1 more or less from the center, the former governing party, and 1 from the center right. again, we don't know the outcome, and the candidates so far have not been very forthcoming on what their political agenda is going to be. But, of course, Mexico is so vital to the United States. Almost two-thirds of our trade with all of Latin America is with Mexico. We share a 2,000-mile border with Mexico. And on the other hand, of course, Mexico is also constrained by that relationship. It sends 90% of its exports. So don't expect major changes in Mexico either, regardless of who wins.
Well, we'll keep talking to you. Peter Hakim, thank you so much for joining us. Peter Hakim is president of the Inter-American Dialogue. He joined us here in Studio 3A.